So, do you want to take me around the studio? Like, what's that second computer for?
It was initially going to be just like an office, you know.
Administration area.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just the, it was going to hold that kind of stuff, but we ended up
The truth is, that was supposed to be my workspace, but they positioned it right under the air conditioner, and I can't handle that cold air being blown on me, so I just kind of move everything. This is the administration area right here, and then my blanket. So,
yeah.
Because that, it's two extremes in here. It's muggy, like it is right now because the air's been off, or it's freezing,
yeah.
And so I come prepared for both. But there is no happy medium in here.
So are y'all a full mixing mastering suite here?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all do the whole shebang.
The whole shebangy bang.
Awesome.
Yep.
Are you one of those places that I want to hear a demo before I record you, or will you record anything? Just
record anything.
Cool.
After UNA, or well, towards the end of UNA, I had to do a stint in a studio before I could graduate, and I recorded some really great stuff, and me and his name's Jeremy Stevens. He owns Clearwave Studio in Decatur, and we have a funny story where we recorded this band. They were from Georgia, and the drummer insisted on bringing his drums, and he had a really nice, like what I have here, similar to what I have here, and really nice drum set, all set up very good. No, I insist on bringing my drum set. You're a drummer, so you kind of understand this. But anyway, he came in, and literally I can remember the inside of the first of all, the toms didn't have bottom toms or bottom heads, and there were cobwebs like all in the toms. It looked like they come out of like a barn somewhere or something. And
please tell me they're at least tuned.
Are you kidding? He didn't even put bottom heads on it. Do you think we're going to go to that level too?
A boy can dream.
I think Jeremy ended up kind of tuning them a little bit for him. But it was getting to it. The kit was so massive. I remember we had to just like, we ran out of microphones and we had to like just put 421s like in between the toms.
Like he had the, like that many.
Like he had the Tommy
up.
Lee kit. Like he had the crew set.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Did he use every piece at least?
Yeah, no. No.
I'm imagining this to be like the Nick Andopoulos drum kit from Freaks and Geeks.
Kind of, yeah.
Except it's kind of a hodgepodge mishmash of things.
It really was. It was why do we have this like 8-inch tom that you're not ever going to hit, you know? Or this 4-inch like roto tom. Why did you bring this, you know?
I might want it for that's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh man.
But yeah, we recorded that, and that's when ultimately I decided I will literally record anybody because I've hit that bottom. I've felt its presence, and I'm going right back up.
I can honestly say that I don't think I've ever seen, I mean, like at garage sales and flea markets and stuff, you know, I've run into, you know, just pieces of a drum set with cobwebs in them, but I don't think I've ever seen a full kit set up with cobwebs.
And it wasn't even like on purpose, like we're a goth band or something. This
yeah,
is like our thing.
Yeah.
No, none of that. No, they were literally. I can't. And the name.
It adds to the acoustics.
I can't remember their name either, and it was so good. It was so what you would expect, but I can't think of what they were called. It was something really bad. And we laughed about that for months. And we did it. And I'm glad we did it. I'm glad he took it on.
because as long as you learn something.
We got a great story out of it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Just like the guy wearing all, you know, denim and the plate in the head and mullet. That's the greatest story. Tell that story again, please, just so it's on record.
So, so I was in a band.
Like the oral history.
So I was in a band called Ashes Fall, and we went from 2001 till 2007. And when we first started, before we even had the singer that we had from 2002 on, we played in a place about 10 minutes away from Oneonta called Cleveland, Alabama. And there was a guy there that we're named. Anonymous. Anyway, because he since passed away, so I don't want to talk about the deceased. Yeah. But anyway, like that. Anyway, he he had a place, and it was called Sharon Noble Music Hall. He was obsessed, of course, with the 80s, and when Sharon Noble happened in the 80s, and it was called Sharon Noble Music Hall, and he was a very... He was a character, as people will say, and he was always dressed in, like, the Canadian tuxedo, except it was, like, stonewashed version, like, the jacket.
This is incredible.
Some sort of, like, very adventurous t-shirt and stonewashed jeans that always matched said jacket. And, like, cowboy boots or high tops or...
Hold on. Cowboy boots, were they tucked in or untucked?
It depends on the day you saw him.
Okay.
Stuff like that. You know, you never knew, was always good.
Are we talking, like, cowboy boots or,
Yeah.
John Bon Jovi hair metal.
No. Well, you know, I would not put it past him.
You know the kind.
Yeah, like with the metal, with like...
Yeah, like yeah. With the metal heel.
The chains and stuff. The chains.
I'm picturing that.
We can picture that.
I like that imagery.
But anyway, he had Chernobyl Music Hall, and he always liked to brag about his place. He was very proud of it, which, you know, he should be, because it was like an old... car detailing shop or something like that before he had it, and he lived there too. I forgot to tell you that.
Oh, okay.
He lived there. Cool. And anyway, he would get local bands at the time and have them come up there, and some bands even from Birmingham would come up there and play. They had no idea what they were in store for, which I can only imagine. I do know there was a guy that came in here, and he had his own story of him too.
Really?
Yeah. And anyway, he was always dressed in, you know, that kind of attire, and after Chernobyl closed down, he got bad, and he had a metal plate. He claims that he has a metal plate in his head, and for unknown reasons, and he would ride in to the local newspaper here in town and complain about radio waves coming through and bouncing off his metal plate, I suppose. You know, that's been a while back. I mean, this is like 7-8 years ago.
I mean, that's such a Spinal Tappy type story. It's just, it's great.
You left out the Kentucky waterfall.
The best part. So he had a very pristine mullet, you know, for the set attire.
Oh, of course.
And it was very permed and very... very nice. When you saw him, it was like country, like if a country guy like was plucked out of like the 80s in like California, you know what I mean? That was kind of like the whole vibe he was going after, but never really succeeded with either way.
That is an eclectic vibe.
Wow. It's like country 80s, but you know,
that's great.
It is amazing. And I'm sad that I missed out on that whole era. I guess I get to just make up for it in my imagination. But you paint a really great picture.
You really do.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It was. He loved telling a story about how a guy from Berklee School of Music came and did all the acoustics to the room, and it was literally just like carpet on the walls.
But Berkeley-worthy.
Berkeley-worthy now.
Carpet. Wasn't that cheap shag shit. It was expensive carpet.
Berkeley carpet.
Berkeley carpet.
Yeah. A lot like this carpet.
Actually. Yeah. That still stays gray.
But, yeah, he, you know, he had something going there for a while. He had shows every weekend, every Friday and Saturday. And, you know, when we first started, it was great because, you know, our local friends and stuff would come up there and watch us play. And, you know, it's kind of where we did our woodshed stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of glad that we did, honestly, because we were not that great.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people that saw us there thought we were, you know, incredible. Like, we were on to something then, because the stuff that we were recording was like a hodgepodge of alternative and metal and hard rock and indie and anything that we could, you know, anything. I mean, we were all like learning about music and stuff then, and mm-hmm. it was of the era of, you know, music was becoming accessible online with Napster and mm-hmm. all this stuff, you know, and you were just like getting a huge influx of music that, you know, places, you know, bands and stuff that weren't coming through Birmingham would necessarily you would hear about.
Yeah.
So,
what range of music have you recorded here?
We've had a nice mix of everything. We've had heavy bands come through. We've had country. We've had Americana. We have hip hop. Mm-hmm. Had a rapper. Am I leaving anything out?
No, that's pretty much it.
Everything from, you know, just a singular person with a guitar to, you know, full band.
Have y'all gotten a lot of people from the Oneonta area in here? Because I hate to you know, stereotype, but driving through here, you know, it's just screams like bluegrass, Americana, like, mm-hmm. you know, that's just what I feel like as I drive through, like, everybody is into that. And I hate to, you know, stereotype, but, you know.
No, I mean, it's definitely here. And if you go, as I say, up the mountain, straight mountain, there's a lot of bluegrass and old country music guys that still get together and play every once in a while.
Yeah. And a lot of the younger people locally, like what we've been getting to, has the whole kind of a southern gothic vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And that's really really interesting and really neat to hear, because that's not something you hear often. And I think that's what we've gotten. But the talent here in Black County is unreal.
Really?
Yeah.
And a lot of people... we've gotten a lot of, well, I've never recorded before. You're the first time I'll be recording.
Right.
You know, it's almost like people have waited for some, like, well, maybe not everybody, but people have waited to, you know, this is in your backyard now.
Well, yeah. I would imagine that the average Joe off the street's not going to know how to mic a mandolin or mic a upright bass or, you know, mic.
Yeah.
A banjo. Or,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's a little bit difficult mm-hmm. than just plug and play. And
right.
Know. Right.
So.
I know you're learning a lot. There are situations that you've been in that you've not been in before that you're learning. And
yeah.
That's when you know you're doing something right.
Yeah. This is...
is when you've got to learn new things and it... keeps happening. There's a learning mm-hmm. curve to it, for sure.
Yeah, this is the third studio I've been in now. Not, this is the first one that it's been just me, but, you know, I had my internship with Jeremy and Johnny Sandlin in Decatur, and then I worked for another studio in Altoona, which is going towards Gadsden from here. And I worked there for a couple few years, and you know, this has definitely been the biggest, I would say the biggest learning experience, because you're on your own, you mm-hmm. know, like you've got to make it happen.
Yeah.
You got to make it happen for these people, you know,
and especially when they have no expectations, you know, you kind of feel the pressure that you need to be on your game at least, you know, and give them a good experience, I would think.
Yeah. And I had like a little studio in my house and recorded people that knew that I had some equipment and could record. And I did really small things. I recorded my own band and recorded a hip hop guy who's actually, I got him to come back in here, start coming back and recording again. And he's out of Birmingham. and just some other random stuff here and there. But yeah, I mean, it's been a definite learning curve to be doing it by yourself and not have that, you know, shoulder to lean on, like, hey, am I doing this right?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And it's been, you know, it's been very, very fun to learn, you know, certain stuff. And, of course, a lot of stuff I did know, but, you know, just coming from being a major in it. But,
yeah,
you know.
Have you had to explain to a lot of people that you can't always fix it in the mix?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's why I could never do this, because yeah. I'd get so tired of people, we'll just fix it in the mix. I hate that.
Yeah,
like, no, you're gonna play it right the first time.
Yes. Yeah, no, I will. And a lot of people want that. Yeah. Like, they want you to pull it out of them.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to do it 50 times if you got to.
Yeah.
You know, I've been there and I've done that. I recorded it on a guy's project that we're recording now, and he asked me to play guitar on some of it. And it was just this little weird turnaround in the song. And I must have done it like 50 times, because every single time it would catch me and I would be just off or a hair, you know, out of it. And I must have done that part like 50 times, and I got, you know, and it's hard when you're recording yourself and then you're doing it for somebody else, and, you know, and you're mm-hmm. trying to do all this, be, you know, wear all these hats at once. And so I understand, you know, you cannot just fix it in the mix kind of crap. That's just not feasible, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's really hard work.
Oh,
recording
yeah.
is not something simple, and it should not be something simple
no.
either. It should be something that you're putting your everything into.
Yeah.
And not, oh, okay, CGG, CGG, F, AD, okay, done, thanks. You know, it's not that simple.
And, you know, it's really a double-edged sword, I think, because on the one hand, it's become more accessible, which is great for me, because as far as I go, I'm self-taught, and I've kind of built things around myself and my disability and what I'm able to do and record myself. But at the same time, like we were talking about earlier, it's analog's become a lost art. You know, that was something that somebody needed to teach you. You couldn't necessarily,
right,
you know, look in a book and figure that out.
Right.
You know, it would be better if somebody showed you, well, this is how you do this. This is how you make an edit.
Right.
You know, so it's really a double-edged sword, I think.
Yeah, I mean, now there's even, like, plugins for tape and tape saturation and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, Wow and Flutter, which, I mean, it's great, too, because, you know, I've watched interviews with, like, the older guys that, you know, purely learned on tape and recorded to tape until, you know, the technology was there, and a lot of them said they can't tell the difference. You know, it's so good now that they can't even tell the difference.
Yeah.
And even the guy who gave me the reel-to-reel, you know, I was telling him the other day that it was getting fixed, and he was like, you know, why are you fixing it? And I was like, because people ask for it. You know, if anything, my goal was to master to it, to get the tapes at the natural tape saturation mm-hmm. and bounce it back into Logic. And because it's, you know, once you hear it go to tape and you get that you hear the natural quality to it, there's something about it that some people call it earthy. It's kind of more of an earthy feel. It doesn't feel so digitized anymore.
Yeah.
I've heard people say warmth or
yeah.
There's describe it as warm.
Yeah.
There's a warmth to it, and it creates a warmth and depth to especially acoustical instruments that you'll never get digitally.
Yeah.
I mean, you can put in 50,000 plugins and think you got it, but
I've tried it, and mm-hmm. yeah, acoustics just sound flat digital.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah, you know. Like I really do. Like I struggle the most probably with getting a good acoustic guitar sound. And I think that's common for a lot of people, you know, because, you know, once you're recording it in digitally and then you get, you know, that tonality with it, you know, I still struggle with it. Mm-hmm. Just getting it to sound as natural and yet crisp and clear as you possibly can.
Yeah, definitely.
And even with drums too, you know, those are probably the two biggest acoustical instruments that I've recorded aside from violin and mandolin. You know, even with like the drums, I take the Steve Albini approach, and every single input that I'm not using for something else is on those drums when I record drums. I've probably got 16, 17 inputs on just drums.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Just so that I can get as much tonality as I can out of it.
And, you know, that's what you have to do. I remember I got back in the day, I got like a Tascam 4-track recorder, and I got a recording book. Like, you know, like how to record or whatever. It was written by the producer who produced Men in Hats, was his claim to fame. And one of his tricks was to do the triangular mic thing on the drums. And I tried that. I'm like, that sounds like shit. Like one in the bass drum and two overhead. I'm like,
yeah.
You know, listen back to it. I'm like
an XY pattern?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, that sounds like shit.
Yeah.
Like, how does this work? No, a mic on everything.
Yeah. The old Zeppelin approach, you know, is just kick, snare, and two large diaphragms.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't mic John Bonham's toms? I know.
They came from the overheads.
Wow.
And whatever room mics.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah, it does.
I know one of my favorite drum sounds is from the Zeppelin 4, and it had a lot to do with the room. You know, I read about how large the room was that Bonham played his drums in, and that's why it sounds so huge.
Yeah, they hung microphones up the stairwell, and he played in the center of it. And there's recently been video of like Chad Smith playing in there and a couple other guys, and they go back to the house and get in the exact same place where John's set was and play. And I mean, it's that sound. I mean, it's just, you know, there's very few places that you can get that kind of tone.
From what I hear, Bonham was a hard hitter anyway.
He was.
So I think that had a lot to do with it too.
Yeah. He was, I think he did like masonry work or something like that before he was in Zeppelin. And he was a big guy anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why, like, all of his toms were huge. And he just wanted just huge sound because he would play so hard.
I remember reading in Tony Iommi's Iron Man book. Did you ever read that?
I didn't.
There's a part where, actually Zeppelin and Sabbath were buddy bands. And I can't think of his name. Drummer from Sabbath never wanted Bonham.
Bill Ward.
Yeah, Bill Ward never wanted him to play on the set. He's like, you fucking bloody always break my head.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, he was a hard hitter.
Yeah. Bonham had a certain way where he recorded or had his toms with these, you know, crazy felts and stuff. The way that he played and stuff was just, I mean, it's second to none, you know. He was one of the best.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I love the fact that you brought up Steve Albini. That's another genius that got to pray to the altar of.
Another Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to praise him for, you know, Nirvana tapped him for In Utero and he refused to take points.
Right.
You know.
He works like
just
a plumber.
Just pay me. That's it. You know, you got to respect that. He could have took points and became a millionaire.
Yeah, he's definitely punk rock at heart.
Yeah, you know, and it goes back to taking points from recording something. It's like, that's just stupid.
Right.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
everybody's different with that.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's, you know, where I'm at now, I kind of feel like that plumber attitude. It's like, you know, I'm not asking for points or anything. Just pay me and pay us and, you know, here's your product and hope you come back.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
So when people come out of here, did they usually get the full mix and the full master?
Mm-hmm.
Do you talk them into that, or do they usually just...
Yeah, I haven't had anybody yet that's just asked just to be recorded or just do my mix or just do my master. I mean, I've had people ask, like, hey, do you master?
Yeah.
Yeah? You know? I mean, if I'm going to take it this far, you know...
Yeah, you might as well.
Yeah, I'll definitely, you know, unless you want to take it to somebody else, which it doesn't hurt my feelings. I mean, I know, and... The big leagues will say, you know, everybody has a hand on it.
Oh yeah,
it's like
definitely.
It goes through multiple hands depending on who the artist is, or
yeah.
You know, it might be just, you know, somebody records, somebody mixes, and somebody masters.
Yeah,
it's good to have multiple ears on a project, and you know, and get the, you know, get everybody's vibe on the album if that's what you're going for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm completely content with just mixing or just mastering somebody's work or just recording their work. But at the same time, though, I don't have any problem mixing and mastering stuff as well. And when I do that, though, I take a lot of breaks from it. And I try to, like, get a good mix, like, X amount of hours. And even in between those hours, like, take a lot. I mean, she knows this. I'll take breaks and, like, watch YouTube videos or yeah. Just something to not listen to.
Yeah, so you don't get ear fatigue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's gotten to the point now where if we're in the car, we're not really even listening to music anymore because his ears need a break from it. And so.
Yeah. It's not that I don't want to listen to music. It's just my brain. It's just like...
NPR, my friend.
Yeah.
NPR.
We listen to a lot of podcasts.
Podcasts. So we have some that we listen to, and I think I got a subscription to Audible, so now we're gonna start doing books too. Just yeah.
Man, I wish I could. I just can't. I don't have a good excuse to sign up for Audible, but I want to so bad.
Yeah.
Because who has time to read?
No.
Right.
Seriously.
That's my struggle too, because I'm an English teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So I read for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Like I grade papers, you know, and I reread stories and prepare for lectures. And then when I'm on break from all of that, it's really hard for me to read for pleasure.
Yeah.
Because I'm so tired of reading constantly, and I'm tired of editing and proofreading, because I have to read closely, and it's exhausting. So I understand where he's coming from, except matter of my eyes and his ears. But
so
Audible, at least I can listen and absorb books, you know. So.
So do you teach at the high school level or middle school?
No, I don't.
Or
college.
College?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you're a big professor.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. No. But I do enjoy it. I enjoy what I do.
Cool.
Yeah, I've been teaching at UAB for, a year. A year
cool.
now. And I really, really love it there.
You probably have no idea who Amy Dagley is.
No, doesn't.
That's my sister-in-law.
Okay.
She works at UAB, but she's like ed law.
Okay. All right.
So, you know, that's like, oh, you live in Australia?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Then you must know.
You must. Yeah. No, I don't. And I'm familiar with just our small little department.
Yeah,
I'm getting to know people within the department. But
I was going to be really surprised if you were like, Amy, we go to lunch all the time. Huh? Really?
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
Cool. But I could definitely see the fatigue in that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I feel so bad too, because I have a lot of my colleagues and my friends, especially the ones that I keep up with in Arkansas. They're always reading and sharing articles and discussing articles. And I'm like, how do you do it?
Yeah.
I can't. Maybe I don't know.
No, I'd be the same way, mm-hmm. you know, if I had to read, you know, papers and, you know, all right. that good stuff all day, like, no, I'm not reading a book.
And I shouldn't complain either, though, because I get to read for a living, and that's initially what got me into wanting to be an English major to begin with, is the fact that my dad, you know, sat me down, he's like, you're going to have to pick a major now. What do you want to do? And I'm like, well, I like to read, so I guess I'll be an English major, and that's...
Hey, that works. Could have been like my could have been like my wife majored in history, and then she gets through it, and it's like, I don't want to teach.
Yeah.
What do you do with a history major?
Right. The last I was telling her the other day, the last Audible book I read was Keith Richards' novel.
Oh, was that good?
Yeah, it was actually really good because he got Johnny Depp. Yeah, Johnny Depp to read a lot of it, and he read some of it too, and it was like War and Peace. It was just so long. It was like, I will never read through this book.
What's surprising about Keith Richards, at least to me, is I've seen him in interviews and how cohesive he is. You think he'd be like, but he's like sharp as hell.
Yeah,
and he's right on it.
Yeah, it's amazing how much he remembers. But then again, you have to think, how much of his life has been like already written down? You know, it's
true.
You just go online and just, if he doesn't remember something, you can just go online. Somebody's written it down somehow.
Probably so.
Yeah.
Because I guess back then it was always like Keith and
Mick.
You know, what are they up to? You know, I'm sure they were all over the tabloids and
yeah, the Glitter Twins.
Yeah.
You've never heard that?
I've never heard that.
I don't know who dubbed him. I don't know if they... I can't remember. It's in the book. I can't remember if they dubbed him themselves that or some... I can't remember. But I think it's even in, like, some of the Stones credits and stuff. They
really?
Themselves that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those bands I never appreciated till like, just recently. Started listening to the Stones. I'm like, why didn't I ever listen to this?
I think a lot of bands... You know, if you didn't like them at 15, you might like them when you're 30.
You know,
you're just not ready for it.
Yeah.
That's true. Like Zappa and Captain Beefheart. You know, like I love them, but you know, when I heard them when I was like, or at least I heard Zappa when I was like 16, 17. I'm like,
yeah.
What's this shit?
Yeah.
Hear them again at like 35. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Why wasn't I listening to this the whole time?
Yeah.
I'm glad somebody else feels that way, because that's how I am about a lot of things.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of stuff I didn't appreciate when I was younger, and now I'm like, this is brilliant. But I will say, living in Arkansas, I was not exposed to a lot of what, like, kids like him were exposed to. We just didn't get it.
We didn't know how well we actually had it.
Yeah.
Y'all really? Did,
because that, I mean, where I'm from, you know, the two biggest genres that are promoted are country and hip-hop. So, there was a rock scene. I don't know now if there really is one anymore there. There could be. I just don't know about it. But, you know, people weren't listening to The Cure. They weren't listening to New Order and Joy Division, and I really didn't get exposed to that until in my 20s.
Yeah.
If they were listening to it, then I didn't know them, you know.
Yeah.
So I feel that, and I'm glad somebody else.
I've held that with a lot of bands.
Yeah.
I'm just like, why wasn't I listening to this?
Exactly.
The whole time. This is great.
Yeah. Right. And you can't be too hard on yourself, though, because at least it gets to you when you need it, I guess, at the right time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I was also the little kid, too, that, you know, was 7, 8 years old, into Rush. You know, I was into Rush. Yeah. And that's hard to believe, too, because I was a little girl into Rush. I listened to a lot of Rush and the Rolling Stones, and I was introduced to Fleetwood Mac at 15, and then that completely just changed me, because my mom was a big Fleetwood Mac fan, and in 1997 they did the dance where mm-hmm. they reunited and did the live album, The Dance, and it was over Christmas break. I think I was in ninth grade, and I came home from a date or something. I don't know. I got home late. My mom and grandmother were sitting in the living room of my grandmother's house, and they were watching this live band. And I sat down, like, who is this? And it's Fleetwood Mac. And then they panned the camera, and I see Courtney Love sitting second row, just clapping. I'm like, okay, well, if Courtney Love thinks this is cool, then I'm about it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna indulge and learn everything I can about this band. And so I picked up every album that I could get, and learned as much as I could about Christine McVie and Stevie Nicks. And I'm a Christine McVie fan. I know everybody. I love Stevie.
The other girl.
Yeah, I love Stevie, and I appreciate Stevie for what she is. But there is something about the pureness of Christine McVie's voice that just penetrated my soul. She's so gorgeous.
I plead ignorance. I'm not a big Fleetwood Mac fan, but she was a singer before Stevie, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then Stevie came in. Mm-hmm. Because of
Lindsey Buckingham.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
They were, I think initially they just wanted Lindsey Buckingham, and then he said, no, we are a package deal. And so Stevie joined the band too.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, but yeah. I guess that's my short history of how I became a music lover, because I'm not, I am a music listener and an appreciator, I guess, but I don't play anything.
So while recording's going on, are you on the couch like, no, that sucks?
Well,
that's all right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't put my input in when bands are here, but there will be times where he is mixing or we're listening, and he'll look back at me and he's like, how does this sound? And I'll give my feedback for what it's worth. But I don't play anything. I cannot sing. I didn't get that, I guess, but I do listen and I do appreciate, and I am a critic too. I can be critical.
I was just wondering if you were like walking through like grabbing necks of guitars. No, stop. That does not sound good.
There have been times that I wanted to.
Yeah.
There have been times where I just want to shh. But I sit back and
just let
nod my head and just let them do their thing. And then there are times where I'm sitting and then the unexpected happens and I'm like, my heart, this is so good. And I'm looking at Brad and I'm like, wow.
And a lot of times, like when she'll do that or whatever, and they'll get done playing, and they'll be like, so was that all right? You know, and it's just like, oh, my God.
And I'm in the back like, yeah, it was.
Yeah, this is great.
I was going to ask, has there ever been a time when it's like two different opinions, like, that was great. No, it wasn't. What are you talking about? That was, did you just hear that?
Yeah.
That was horrible.
I have a way of, because I've been on the opposite end of that. And so I never try to be like, oh, that was complete and utter shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Let's not do this anymore.
We can't do that.
You learn how to talk musician talk. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You've got to be like, you know, I like what you did, but, you know, what if you had tried this instead? Or let's keep doing what you're doing, but let's add this on top of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and let's change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're all about it and sometimes they're not. And when they are all about it, it's great, you know, because there's that working relationship. But then when there's that opposite, you know, well, I've been playing like this, I don't want to stop playing like this. You know, you're just kind of there like, well, this is their song, and if this is what they want,
mm-hmm.
you know, what can I, who am I to, you know, judge somebody's art?
True.
And, you know, and I still try to, you know, give positive criticism and, you know, try to reinforce, you know, throughout the song or songs, and, you know, just do the best I can for them. I mean, they pay me to sit here and listen to them and give my input,
yeah.
as well as record them, you know.
And he has the gift of diplomacy too. Like, he is able to really find the good and things. And I think that's what makes him so good, and why the recordings that come out of here are so good, is because he can pull it out of people.
Yeah.
And I think it's because you are so positive, and he makes everybody feel like a good musician. He makes everybody feel like a professional. Me, on the other hand, I'm not that way. I guess my role in all of this too is I'm the general listener.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm kind of looked at as the general listener. So when he's done with something, I'll listen to it, and I have the ears of just the average Joe, in the radio, and then I'm able to say, well, I mean, if this was heard on the radio, you know, it's fine. He'll find all the flaws in it and want to fix things, but as you know, I'm like, well, as far as you know, the average person on the radio or you know, listening in their iPod, it sounds good. So we have that. Where we balance each other out, and
since having Analog on Third, I've been extra hard on myself because before I had this studio, I didn't work. I actually did not record other musicians, and it had been 4 years, and so that was a long, and you know, in technology world, that's a, you know,
lots happened in that
leaps
time.
And bounds.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of updates, you know, DAWs and stuff, you know, and new technology that's come out. And I just felt so behind. And, you know, for a while I was just like, when we got all this equipment, we were, you know, I started learning and like picking up, you know, what all, you know, I needed to know, you know, that was current, and versus what I already knew from my, you know, schooling and past, you know, working with other bands and stuff and artists, and just trying to mold that all together, and even reread up on stuff and watch, of course, tons of YouTube videos and tutorials and stuff. Because Logic is actually like the fifth DAW I've used.
Really?
Yeah. And it started with Pro Tools at school and Cubase and Nuendo and Digital Performer, and even a little bit of Ableton. And I started out as a teenager using Cool Edit Pro, which was a freeware. And in the 90s.
I had that too.
Yes.
Cool Edit Pro.
Yes, and then they got bought out by Adobe, and it became Adobe Audition. And it was this, and it still is the standard for all radio stations and stuff. And I was even using that, you know, at home forever. Like I would take cassettes of, before there was Ashes Fall, my high school band, and I would take a little cassette recorder that I bought at Walmart for $20 and put the cassettes in, and then look for a place within the room to record it where it didn't sound so overdriven and distorted, because of course we were playing as, you know, as loud,
hard as he could,
as loud as every Black Sabbath album, times 10, and to where the cops would get called on us, and we'd have the cops call us. And anyway, so I got interested in learning where exactly to put the recorder for it to sound good.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want just like it to sound like crap. I wanted it to sound good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and so it ended up, it was always behind a door. That was the best place.
Oh, yeah.
In another room, behind the door, shut the door, and whatever filters through the door, you know, it's a good buffer.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't get the overdrive. And so later on, I had all these cassettes and of practices and stuff, and in basements and houses and garages we would play in. And my parents got a computer, and it had the first burner on it, a little 4X burner. And so I learned that I could take, you know, an auxiliary jack and plug it into the cassette player, into the back of the sound card. And then with Cool Edit Pro, I could, you know, stream it onto it. And then just learning, like, what's compression do? What is this EQ? Of course, I knew what an EQ was, but how does it sound, you know, with just this master track? And I learned, you know, my sister went to UNA, and she was telling me about how they had a school, like a really good music school there, and a recording school. And so that piqued my interest in late high school, junior year, and sophomore, junior year. And So I got really interested. And that's kind of where it formulated of, you know, recording and the idea of what can sound good, you know, without having too much at my, you know, accessibility, just whatever came on Cool Effect Pro. You know, and just praying there would be, like, good updates or something to it eventually and download new updates until it was no longer free.
God, I haven't thought about Cool Edit Pro for so long. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yes, Cool Edit Pro.
Yeah, my friend's dad.
Because that's kind of what I did, but with the Bedtaskum 4 track.
Yeah.
I'd run an auxiliary cable from that to the computer.
Yeah.
And edit just the one track.
Yep.
And Cool Edit Pro.
Yeah. And then I would burn the CD and make, like, you know, a cover for it. You know, it would be like a picture that somebody took of us or whatever playing.
Oh, yeah. And you thought it was hot shit.
Oh, this was, hey, we got CDs.
Yeah.
Here's
yeah.
one, you know.
Inkjet printer, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. For real, that was, you were big time.
Yeah. I remember those days.
Yeah, man. You didn't have to pay somebody to make it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, Yeah, did your DVD burner take forever to...
It was a 4X, so yeah.
4X,
it took,
yeah.
Like, 10 songs took, like, 20 minutes or something. Yeah. It was, like, ridiculous.
I remember we had one, tried to burn, like, 10 CDs, and it took about... Well, because I couldn't stay up all night, it took 2 days.
Yeah.
To do 10 CDs. Had to do 5 one night.
Yeah.
Stay up till... God knows when. Do yeah. 5 the next night.
Yeah.
That's what you had to do, man.
Yeah.
We've come a long way, baby.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I've still got all those cassettes and those CDs upon CDs and CDs. Mm-hmm. There's no telling how many CDs there are of just practices and stuff. So I would get real diehard with it and just, you know, I would give it to them, hoping they would listen to it. Listen back to our 20 songs or whatever we had, little pop rock songs.
Mm-hmm.
And hoping that they would listen to it and try to make something better of it. But you know, we just end up just keep writing.
Yeah.
We weren't serious. You know, this was like, I would write lyrics. I wrote the lyrics in high school, and I would like sit in Latin class or whatever and write out all the lyrics to a song and then give them to my friend. I didn't like to sing, and so I'd give them to my friend who also played guitar, and he would sing them. And that was the formation of the band later on.
Cool.
He started writing lyrics, and I would write lyrics too. And then we were both like, well, the wells kind of run dry. We should probably find a singer. And he really wanted to play guitar more anyway. He was more of a guitar player. And we both taught each other guitar. And and we both really just wanted to play guitar. And so when we found a singer.
So since you own most of this, majority of this, do you still play? You still record yourself?
I have not, well, aside from the project that I did where I had to, where I played on a guy's song, I play occasionally, like, the drummer of that band, he'll come in every once in a while and we'll play, and he actually helped me pick out the drum set. It's really, like, his dream setup, and I was like, you know, just pick out, like, whatever drum set you would have always wanted.
That is a sweet set, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah. We love DW. It's the best hardware and drums by far.
Oh, hands down.
I mean, there's lots of other great ones out
there. Oh, yeah, but...
But you can't...
I've always been a DW guy, so...
Yeah. Yeah. But, anyway, he helped me pick out the drum set, and, I forgot where I was going with this. Crap.
You did it again. You talked yourself in a circle.
Sorry.
Did that earlier today. me and this dude were talking. It's like, what were we talking about? I don't know. Well, I'll just edit all this out. we were talking about the drum set, and I was talking about the guy that helped you picked out the drum set. You play with him some.
Yeah. We play together every once in a while. We'll just come in and just jam. And Ashes Fall actually got back together for a few practices not long ago in here and just tried to hash some stuff out. And really, I just wanted stuff more than anything to learn some of the new things that I had gotten for the studio and see how they sounded, recorded, and recorded some stuff and haven't put it out. It's kind of where we left with it.
Yeah.
And we hadn't, honestly, a couple of the guys hadn't even played since the last time they played with us. Now it's been, you know, years ago. So
yeah,
it was a lot of rust to knock off.
Yeah, totally understandable.